Hi everyone, happy holidays. What a year 2024 has been. This has been quite a year of growth. On the personal front, our family grew, we had another baby boy, and I relearned all about the newborn days with a four-year-old running around. On the Coriam front, this was also a year of growth. We expanded to other platforms, particularly on YouTube. And so we thought this time at the end of the year, it would be good to look back at some of the fantastic teaching that came from some of the video teaching. We'll go through and hear clips from our favorite, one from the outreach group, one for the whiteboard animations team, and then lastly, one from the behind the scenes interview crew. So three in total. So first up is Dr. Nick Villano, who started a series for just-in-time teaching called Just in the, quote-unquote, Nick of Time. Yes, pun intended with his name. One of my favorites that I've pulled up multiple times on rounds now is the one he did on anion gap metabolic acidosis with the Goldmark mnemonic. Now, I think we've all known the Goldmark mnemonic for a long time, but I just love the nuances that he added to it. And he actually writes gold on one side of the paper and mark on the other side of the paper. And this allows him to group it in a way where he can actually remember the big buckets, the alcohols, the over-the-counter meds, and the metabolic causes of anion gap metabolic acidosis. So let's play a clip from him going over the over-the-counter meds that causes anion gap metabolic acidosis.
Let's move on down to the next box, O and A. O is for oxaproline. And all you need to know is that that's a metabolite of Tylenol, or Tylenol, if you want to stress the O to make it stick. A is for aspirin, but use this to remind yourself that other salicylates can cause an anion gap acidosis too. This includes bismuth subsalicylate, or Pepto-Bismol, and methyl salicylate, which is found in some topical pain medications like Bengay. So this is the OTC, or over-the-counter medication box. Over-ingestion of these medications can lead to acidosis in the blood, and sending an early serum tox screen is important to make an accurate diagnosis.
And again, we'll link in the show notes a 5-minute video going over the whole Goldmark mnemonic and all the nuances he adds to it. All right, next up is our favorite pick from the whiteboard animations team, inhaler delivery systems. Now, I just feel like the content is so relevant. I mean, think about the number of patients we've had come in for asthma and COPD exacerbations, and how often do we actually ask them to show us how they're taking their daily home inhalers and if they're doing so appropriately. So let's play a short clip from Dr. Ali Sheridan on how do you counsel patients to use their inhaler with a PMDI system. How do you know if your patient has a PMDI system? Well, on the MedRec, you're going to look if their inhaler ends with HFA. Like, so for example, albuterol HFA in their MedRec. I am so excited to have Echo Core 500 Digital Stethoscope as a sponsor. I actually learned about them accidentally a year or so ago when I'd forgotten my stethoscope and my resident let me borrow his, and I just was like, wow, I've never heard heart sounds or lung sounds this clearly. You just get this extra level of confidence for those moments where you're asking, was that faint crackles? Was that an S3 gallop? And so that's because Echo's digital stethoscope amplifies sounds 40x. And then on top of that, it has noise cancellations, so you can really hear with precision in a noisy ED or with a really loud roommate or other environments. Echo AI is also built in and helps you detect murmurs and AFib earlier. A cool thing also is that you can record that heart sound that you heard, share it later with your team, or on a case presentation. And then you can really trust the diagnostic accuracy. It's backed by 4 million heart sounds and 8 FDA clearances for the devices and the AI algorithms. So those who use Echo are twice as likely to catch heart disease. What I think is neat is that Echo 500 isn't just the digital stethoscope. You can actually also get an EKG tracing right on the app when you place an Echo 500 on a patient's chest, so no more waiting around trying to trace down the EKG machine on the floor. I trust Echo so much that I work with a team to create a special offer just for our listeners. Right now, you can get $50 off plus a free customizable chest piece cover at echohealth.com/Coriam. Your purchase will be HSA and FSA eligible and may also qualify for CME reimbursement. Plus, Echo guarantees you're going to detect heart and lung sounds more confidently, and if you don't, you can return it with a full refund. Go to echohealth.com/Coriam for $50 off plus a free chest cover. That's ekohealth.com/Coriam. And with that, let's get back into the episode. Here at Coriam, we're talking about the real things that can help anyone who works in healthcare. And today we're talking about how the scrubs you wear, they can make a difference. I remember the first time I saw one of my colleagues walking into a sign-up room looking way more put together after a night shift, and I knew right then and there, They were wearing FIGS. FIG Scrubs is made specifically for us doctors, residents, students, healthcare professionals who are putting in long hours and really need gear that can keep up and perform on our level. We have so much going on in any shift, right? Scrubs are the last thing we want to be thinking about, and that's why FIGS is great in that they're lightweight, stretchy, breathable. They have all the small touches that have made me a true convert. They're clean, they're modern, super functional, tons of pockets that I love for all the snacks, zippers that don't snag, and antimicrobial fabric to stay healthy while working. You deserve better scrubs. You deserve FIGS. So head over to FIGS.com and enter FIGSRX at the checkout for 15% off your first purchase. That's FIGS.com, promo code FIGSRX for 15% off your first purchase. And with that, let's head back to the episode.
PMDIs have medication stored in a pressurized canister. The PMDI needs to be shaken. You have to coach patients to inhale and press down on the canister at the same time. Doing this can be technically challenging, so it's a good idea to watch them and give them feedback on how they're using their inhaler. And last but not least, and maybe most important of all, is to tell patients to hold their breath for 10 seconds after the medication is released in order to get a full dose.
Yes, hold their breath for 10 seconds after. Can't emphasize that enough. And of course, the visuals make it a lot easier to follow, and it's a great 6-minute teaching that you can even give to your patient. And it also covers how to properly use dry powder inhalers or soft mist inhalers. We will link it in our show notes, but please go check it out. Okay, last but not least, we realized with the podcast that we had all these wonderful parts of the interviews that never made it on air, mostly because we have to be so mindful of the cognitive load of each episode. But one interview I still remember so vividly till today is Dr. Michael Auerbach. He is the man that wrote the IV Iron page on UpToDate and just is full of these zingers. I mean, he has this fierce advocacy when it comes to implications of iron deficiency in pregnancy. And I have had so many colleagues, so many friends, men, women, who really had to advocate when they were having a child to get, for example, a ferritin checked or give IV iron despite, you know, having a hemoglobin of 9 and being so symptomatic, extremely fatigued in the second trimester. I think it's just sad to see that we have just kind of accepted as a society that women will have to suffer during this time. I, again, love Dr. Auerbach's advocacy, and my ears especially perked up when he talked about even the implications of iron deficiency on the fetus. And this part of the interview, honestly, was so good, I had a hard time picking just a clip, so I'll just let Dr. Auerbach take the floor.
The fact of the matter is that iron deficiency in women is rampant. I can tell you I don't know anything about you, and I'm not going to ask you any personal questions right now. If I were to do a bone marrow on either of you right this second, there's a 60% chance it would have no stainable iron. And if either of you have a child, move that number to about 85. Okay, so that's fact. It's a long-standing issue, so it's really time that we address it. Preconceptual iron sufficiency is something that is absolutely essential, and iron deficiency at any week of gestation, or at least anemia, has been associated with a statistically significant increment in spectrum disorders in the baby. So let's take a pregnant woman walks into her OB and goes, "Hi, I'm pregnant." Fair number of tests are ordered, and they should be. They check for syphilis, gonorrhea, AIDS, hepatitis, measles, rubella, liver functions, and they do a CBC. But if you're not anemic, they don't check an iron study. They don't even get a ferritin, or if you're non-anemic. So the United States Preventive Services Task Force says there's insufficient evidence to recommend routine screening for iron deficiency in the absence of anemia. That's so outrageous, it borders on negligence. The prospective studies, one of which I had the privilege to do, shows that 50% of you, 50% of women presenting gravidas in the first trimester are iron deficient based on serum ferritin, percent transferrin saturation, or both. When you get further into pregnancy, that number goes much higher. 25% are severe. 40% are never diagnosed. It's outrageous that we don't do a ferritin at diagnosis. So in pregnant women, non-anemic iron deficiency is present in half. That means 50% of you are ignored. Ignored, that's the right word. I think we're going to fix that. FIGO just published an entire supplement, and I had the privilege of writing one of the sections, which is really the management of pregnant and non-gravid iron deficiency, and where we talked about the importance of preconception, iron repletion, intrapartum, iron repletion and stressing that it's much more important to deal with intrapartum iron sufficiency rather than postpartum iron repletion. Babies born iron deficient have measurable decrements in behavior, cognition, motor function, and brain development. To give you an idea how outrageous this truly is, we don't check babies for iron deficiency at birth. We have their cord blood. We have it. It's in our hands. All we can do is check off a ferritin, but we don't. What we do is we prick the heel to look for phenylketonuria. I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. We absolutely should. But iron deficiency occurs at a level associated with measurable developmental decrements in 1 in 4.
How do you choose between oral treatment versus IV treatment?
All right, well, now we have to define who I am. I'm extremely polemic. I think oral iron is ridiculous. Okay. Ferrosulfate's fine. Ferrosfumarate's fine. But if you have inflammatory bowel disease, heavy uterine bleeding, chronic kidney disease, collagen vascular disease after bariatric surgery, or pregnancy, where oral iron doesn't get to the baby, The data's there. And now, if you would have done this interview 2 months ago, I would have said the big problem I have is that we don't have proof that IV iron does. Now we do. It was just published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, MFM, and IV and not oral iron corrected the baby's ferritins. Now, what we don't know is that going to make a difference in development, but our anemia study, which is called Rapid Iron in India, over 4,300 women accrued, finished. We'll have the last delivery of those 4,300 women in about 8 weeks. And we should have our first set of data in February. The second phase of the study is called Rapid Iron Kids. About 1,000 babies, all of whom had ferritins. They're going to get MRIs to look for brain geography. And we really believe we're going to show a difference in development in the babies who got IV compared to oral iron. I hope.
That would be amazing. What a game changer for the world.
Yeah, this is a game changer. I mean, it's time. I was just in Switzerland last week. I was invited by the World Health Organization to talk about setting up a platform for the administration of IV iron to pregnant women in lower and middle income countries. But I'm telling you, I don't know that I'm going to live long enough to get the World Health Organization to move their behind.
Hopefully. That's all very inspiring. So basically, pregnant women should not receive oral iron.
Not after the first trimester. Now, in the first trimester, that's the only iron I prescribe. Not because IV iron is dangerous in the first trimester, but because there's no safety data with IV iron in the first trimester. Mm. I've treated 9,000 pregnant women, and I have zero serious adverse events and zero negative baby outcomes. Mm. And if either of you think that there's a significant difference between 0 and 1, we have a philosophical difference. 0 is the number that I need to live with. So I'm not going to mess around with trimester number 1. I tell them to take 1 iron pill every other day till 14 weeks, and then I give IV iron. And as I said, if you can't tolerate it, just don't take it. You know, eat iron-rich foods, and I'll give you IV iron at week 14.
And you can find more of Dr. Auerbach, as well as other content from brilliant guest experts that didn't make it on air, on our YouTube channel. And credit to Dr. Alice Kennedy that leads this. We'll link more to these in the podcast app, as well as in the show notes. We hope you've enjoyed this potpourri of best of that exists outside the podcast series. Please go check out our YouTube channel that we're building up. Subscribe. As always, we welcome feedback. We hope you have a fantastic start to your 2025. Please take this time to celebrate yourself and how far you've come.